When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Anthony Edwards. Look out! Edwards coast to coast off the steal. And can't stay. Edwards knocks it away. He's got Prince with it. Prince back to Edwards. Anthony Edwards putting on a show right now. Looking for three more points. And he's got points. Edwards sees an opening. Anthony Edwards right down the middle.
Get the flag.
Get the flag.
Oh. Come get on, the John. Flag, Zolgad.
The flag. The flag.
Get the flag.
The flag. Here it is.
Wait the flag. The flag is out. The flag is out.
The sixth seed in the Western Conference.
Hey, here we go.
All eyes north.
No, it's
raised by Wolves.
Raised by
great marketing.
Wolves. Run with the pack.
You know what? This is so special. I'm going to double whammy it. I'm not just going to do the flag. I'm also going to give you the original garbage can.
Oh, yeah, baby.
It's the original Timberwolves logo garbage can.
Cody Campbell.
Bang the can.
Bang the can.
Felton Spencer, Doug West, Sam Mitchell.
That is Timberwolves fever right there, boys. A flag and the original garbage can.
I have a fever, and the only thing that can cure it is more Ode to Joy.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, John.
Oh, there we go. Woo. Okay.
Oh, God, it's good.
Tired,
God, it's good to be the sixth seed, boys. And actually,
are we the eighth
all these
now?
People talking about the sixth seed. Exhausted. What am I missing here? They're tied with the Clippers for the five seed. People keep tweeting out like they're the Wolves or the sixth seed. The Wolves and the Clippers are tied. Maybe there's a tiebreaker in here. I don't know. If it's point differential, it goes to the Wolves. So the Wolves right now, they are one game behind the Mavericks for the fourth seed in the West. By the way, we're 25% of the way through the schedule.
For the Timberwolves, this is
big,
this
baby.
Is the dog days, man.
Now, 2 years ago, they did start 10-8 and then rolled off 11 consecutive losses. But I think Karl Anthony Towns got hurt or something. And a bunch of things went sideways that season. But you were in the arena last night. This is Mackie and Judd, Daily Minnesota Sports Celebration. Sometimes therapy, but today's celebration. You were in the arena last night, sitting in the posh media row within arm's reach of Finchie's Huddles, basically.
Finchie.
Yeah. Me and D-Lo.
So I want you to empty the notebook here, and I know that you have handwritten notes, I'm sure, sitting that close to the Wolves bench.
Terrible.
You get all the box score printouts. What were your firsthand observations from as Finch described it? They did not play well last night for the majority of that game, but they still grinded out a win. And I think there's a lot of times in Wolves history the last 17 years where they look like that and then like get beat by 15 or blow a 15-point lead and they wind up hanging on. So give us a couple of your front row observations.
Well, one thing I absolutely loved is at halftime, Finchie was very upset by the lack of defense, but he was without, and his team was without Jaden McDaniels, Jared Vanderbilt, Patrick Beverley.
Yes, your two best defensive players, I think, in Beverley and Vanderbilt. Yeah,
and three guys who bring something like they can all be important, and so I love the fact that Finchie was upset And I also love this fact too. So this, okay, so this is where the Wolves, in my opinion, have a different heartbeat than they have had previously, or at least for a very long time. Okay. In the box score.
Can you hear that?
Yes. That's the heartbeat, man.
That's my high cholesterol.
Thank you. Thank you. Huey Lewis. The heartbeat, though, to me, is this. It's Ant. Because so Ant had 21 last night. And, you know, if you just look at the box score, it's like, okay, decent game, right? But excellent. I would argue no. I would argue that in the third quarter, and I don't know if Finchie said something at halftime. I don't know if Ant just said enough of this. But Ant, I believe, had 8 points at the half. Or I'm sorry, he had 11. Or yeah, 8 points at the half. In the third quarter, he scored 11. And as I tweeted, almost every one of those points could have gotten on a highlight show. He brought energy. He had a couple dunks. He had steals. He played defense. He provided not only the results in the box score, but also probably just as importantly, he provided a tempo changing quarter himself. Mm-hmm. And what I absolutely loved was you can see his teammates sort of gravitate towards that. Oh, it's go time now. Right. Yeah, like,
it's go time.
Think about how many times this Timberwolves team had a chance, and in a quarter, it's like, oh, yeah, no, it's not going to work for us tonight. It's not going to work. So the fact that Ant brought the energy that he did and the play that he did in the third quarter to sort of take the tide from being might not be the Wolves' night to, oh, no, we can win this game, is such a drastic change in my opinion. And that's something that, God bless him, aside from like a couple of times a year, Karl Anthony Towns doesn't really have. Like, Karl can score your points and Karl can do a lot of good things, but I don't think that Karl had a lot of tempo changing games where it's just like in one quarter, everything sort of gravitates towards his team. So this to me was incredibly huge because it showed a spark from a player that the Timberwolves, both as far as probably talent goes, but just as importantly from an emotional standpoint, that this team has lacked, Phil.
What you're talking about is really hard to quantify because it's a feeling, right? It's like it's a feeling that you get in a home arena. And, I mean, look at, like, the Warriors are one of the greatest teams we've seen in our lifetimes. And you could probably point to the Showtime Lakers that had this quality, too, back in the 80s. But when the Warriors in their heyday, which, by the way, they might be back in their heyday based on the start to the season, and they get Klay freaking Thompson back at some point. When the Warriors are down by 4 points or 5 points, and then all of a sudden, like, they flip a switch and they just start pouring in three-pointers at home, and it's the heat check three from Steph Curry that goes in to make a four-point deficit over the course of 3 minutes a nine-point lead, and it's like a tsunami of energy and emotion from the fans. And, you know, the NBA, there's a lot of momentum swings and teams blow leads, but, like, if you can get that sort of tsunami of energy going in your favor at home, and you don't do it by just making shots, like, there's a personality to it. And it sounds so dumb because it's like you can't quantify it, you can't go to Basketball Reference, but what Ant did at the end of the third quarter last night, and the Wolves were down, like, they were down by like 10 points or whatever at halftime, and they're kind of chipping their way back throughout the third quarter, and Ant grabs a rebound, starts a fast break, dishes over to Taurean Prince, who throws a lob, and Ant grabs it with one hand, puts it down, boom, now crowd on their feet. Okay, wow, Anthony Edwards just posterized somebody else, and like a minute later, he gets a steal, comes down, knocks down a 27-foot three from the top of the key to give the Wolves the lead for the first time in the third quarter, and it was like, that wasn't just a dunk and a three in the box score. It was everyone off their keisters, alley-oop posterization, steal, momentum building, a three to put the Wolves in front, and it was like no turning back at that point. And so I don't know, there's not like a stat to describe it, but it's like that tsunami of energy that he brings to the home arena that not many players can. Like KG used to bring it. Yes. Ricky Rubio brought it like in doses when he would make a highlight reel. When they had a couple years where he was throwing lobs to everybody and whatnot. Yeah. But like, they haven't had a lot of that. It's been 17 years since we've really had that on a regular basis in that arena.
Yeah, I think the last guy who officially brought the intangible that Ant brings is KG, right? Because, and what's weird is, and this was so much fun to watch, but, you know, KG's first game back here, he brought that. He's just got, I mean, certain people, and this is not like I'm going to be that guy, so watch me. Certain people just have that, and Ant has that. He's got that. I mean, he's not a great player yet. He is a tremendous player to watch. He brings a lot, but he also brings an attitude and a defiance, but it's almost likable. That's like, okay, yeah. And you hit it perfectly in saying what he did in the third quarter last night brought the arena. So like, it wasn't just the guys on the bench or something. It was all of the people there. And I think the important thing too is that gets people to want to come back, fans wise.
Yeah. The way that you felt, you're like,
exactly.
That was, like, it was a Monday sports. Night game this against, is... yeah, it was yeah. a Monday night game against the Pacers, but it was like, no, the way that you felt in that arena was probably
right.
Holy crap.
This is the first time in a long time, I think, the Wolves have had a player that you really gravitate towards and want to see. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like Kat, and this is going to sound weird because Kat is a tremendous player, but I feel like Kat is he's fun. I'll watch more games on TV, right? Ant, you go and you're like, oh my God, this is great. This is fantastic. And he makes those plays that a lot of guys can't make. So yeah, I would caution against just looking at the box score and being like, oh, Ant was good. Yeah, no, Ant provided an emotional turn to me that took that game from probable loss to not tonight.
Yeah.
And again, you don't play a perfect game. And that's the thing about sports. You've got to have people where you don't have to play a perfect game and it doesn't matter.
Yes.
That's right. Like this whole thing about they played a perfect game or they were great tonight. That's fantastic. But how often does that truly transpire? You know, we blew them out the majority of games in any season are going to be flawed. The question is, can you overcome the flaws and do you have the personnel? And it felt like last night the Wolves did. And what, Phil, the last 15 years, they often have not.
Well, I also feel the same way whenever the Wolves have like a 15-point lead in the fourth quarter. I feel the same way as I do when a Vikings kicker lines up for a key field goal. Just like, oh God,
yeah.
Okay, how is this going to, what's going to happen here? Is it going to get blocked? Like when the Wolves have a 15-point lead or a 20-point lead or even whatever, it's like, okay, what's going to happen here? Who's going to foul out? You know, who's going to dribble a ball off their knee out of bounds and give possession back?
Yeah.
And there definitely was a stretch as recently as 3 weeks ago where they were doing those things. They were, and they might blow, they play a bunch of playoff teams now over the next like 3 weeks. So their schedule does not get easy. So they're going to lose games and they might blow some leads, but they've done so much in the last two or three weeks to show you something that we haven't seen in years, which is fight. And when you're down, when the refs are making bad calls or you're not getting calls or whatever, you're on the road in Philadelphia,
yes,
and everyone's fouling out and Embiid is hitting everything. Like, that's a game that they lose 100 times out of 100, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of maybe the Jimmy Butler season, which was always just kind of a short-term mercenary situation. But, like, that win against Philadelphia felt different. Because they're in double overtime, and everyone's falling out, and Embiid is scoring 40 points and hitting every shot at will, and you can't defend him. And it's like, and you won the game? and you know, credit to D'Lo for just being incredibly clutch in that game. You know, the last 17 years, the only season that was really relevant from a playoff perspective was, you know, the Jimmy Butler season. But like I said, that always felt like a mercenary just coming here. It always felt combustible. It never felt like he was going to be a lifelong Timberwolf. He was just going to play to the end of his contract or just force a trade like he did.
Right.
This feels real because it's two first overall picks that you drafted.
Yep.
And it's a trade that you sought for a young player in D'Angelo Russell. And then it's a bunch of complementary pieces that make sense that you found either through the draft or via trades. It feels homegrown and it feels sustainable.
Do we think that behind the scenes, Finchie is pulling D'Lo aside each time that a team goes at him on defense, or showing him clips, or somebody's doing a marvelous job of telling D'Lo, everybody thinks you suck on defense. Like, he keeps bringing it up, and he's right, but I mean, it's clear, because he strikes me, I think he's a smart guy, but two, he strikes me as the type of guy who probably doesn't like sweat stuff a lot. Like, I don't think he goes and seeks out, you know, Google his name and defense. It feels like somebody has decided, very smart move, to be like, hey, look at this column. This column says you can't play defense. Because like the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks, he's been on a tear of, you think I can't? And it's perfect. It's working out perfectly.
Well, this is also from there's a lot of different metrics that can help you quantify this. But by many different measurements, this is the best D'Angelo Russell has played defensively in his career.
Yeah.
And he was asked, and you can see like there's a certain culture that has taken hold here. And I think Chris Finch is part of it. I think Patrick Beverley, even if he's not playing, like Patrick Beverley is literally sitting in street clothes, not sitting, standing.
He was on
in street clothes.
Yeah.
Sometimes on the court, calling out defensive.
He was doing that
adjustments
last night.
And right.
He was jumping off the bench and like getting in Finchie's way at times last
yes.
night to do, which by the way, I absolutely applaud.
For some reason, there are some teams, and the Wolves have been a team like this, that just, it's almost like they think defense isn't cool, or that like, mm-hmm. well, if we try on defense, I think it goes even deeper from like an ego perspective, or like, well, if you try on defense and get beat, then it's like a blow to our egos. And so like, we just, you know, we'll just come back and score on offense. It's a buy-in thing. And the Wolves have enough guys now. Jared Vanderbilt loves playing defense, and he's not a great offensive player. So like, how is he going to stick in the NBA? By just being an amazing rebounder and shot blocker and just on ball defender. Mm-hmm. I think with Beverly, Vanderbilt, and even the energy that Jaden McDaniels, who's not been that great this season, but like the energy that he brings, there's clearly a coolness when it comes to defense now. Like they pride themselves on holding a team under 105 points, you know? And there's been a lot of years where it just kind of felt like Cat was going through the motions and D'Lo was going through the motions. Anthony Edwards is the one that blocked Joel Embiid's potential game-winning shot at the end of that double overtime against the Sixers.
Yeah,
and it kind of went unnoticed because D'Angelo Russell was the one hitting all the clutch shots, and there were so many other things in that game, but it's like Anthony Edwards rejected Joel Embiid to win that game, and it was a great microcosm for just the way that this team has embraced defense so far.
That might be Pat Bev. You might be right.
Yeah.
If so, again, Gersan, NBA Executive of the Year. Let's find him.
What a performance.
Let's find him
yes.
wherever he is. Let's oh, get God. Him that trophy. But yeah, you might be right, because somebody's definitely challenging them. And I think it's brilliant, because that's where guys are like, oh, I'll show you now.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like there's definitely a challenge. So yeah. And on the Butler thing, I think we now can really quantify, and I couldn't, I loved how he played when he cared, but I think it was hard. People didn't get why we were so down on him, and, you know, the BS stunts he pulled. But watch these guys now. Watch what Pat Bev does. And I'm not saying he's as good. He certainly is not. But also watch how Ant plays, because Ant plays with the passion of Butler. But watch how Ant does it in a productive way. And the kid's 20 years old, but his passion is so productive. And if Cat's going great guns, that's awesome. Cat, come along. And if Cat's not, it's like, okay, that's cool too. You know, Butler's thing about absolutely crapping on teammates, I think is now, it now becomes more clear why it was such BS in watching Ant play. Because Ant brings those same intangibles and the same passion. But he does it in such a productive way. And this is where the thing with Butler to me was just quitting. Because in Butler's mind, it's like, well, if you guys aren't going to change, screw it. Ant works his butt off. And Beverly, who is that seasoned veteran type of guy, is like, oh, no, you're going to pay attention to what I'm saying here. I'm not going to pout and piss and moan.
Yeah, I think on the Butler front, obviously his style of leadership is working in Miami because they went to the NBA Finals a couple seasons ago. You know, once again, they're among the top like six teams in the NBA this year, and it's working with that sort of Spoelstra, Pat Riley culture, and they've had this tough, grind-it culture in a glamorous city. For 20, 30 years, the Heat have been this grind-it team. They play defense, Dwayne Wade, right? I think my biggest beef with Butler is I'm actually fine with his style of leadership, and I love the way that he plays. He's a really good player, but he didn't want to make it work and fit with Towns. And some of that's on Towns for just like either not being mentally and emotionally mature enough or hard enough, quote-unquote, to mesh to, but when you had hard-ass Tom Thibodeau and hard-ass Jimmy Butler, but you had star player of the future in Karl-Anthony Towns, you wanted it to work really badly, but Jimmy Butler and even Tom Thibodeau were both like, ah, this guy's a sissy. Like, they literally just thought he was... And there was some truth to that, and there remains some truth to that. Like, every time Karl-Anthony Towns falls to the ground and then sits there while there's a fast break going the other way and throws his hands up, it's like, that's the stuff that pissed off Jimmy Butler, too. Dude, what are you doing? Be mentally tough. Get up. Don't complain all the time. And I have issue with those things too. But my beef with Butler is he just had no desire to want to make it work. His answer was just, I don't want to be here. I'm out of here. And he can. That's fine. That's his prerogative. And then the same thing happened in Philadelphia. He wanted out of there. He didn't want to re-sign with them too because, well, I think it's mostly because of Ben Simmons. But Anthony Edwards, the way that he goes about leading, if you will, is just this sort of joyous, bring everyone together style, but he can also go into bleep you cyborg mode at any time too.
Correct.
It's going to be really fun to see how that evolves over the next 5 years of his career, because he's only going to get better and more mature. And like, I saw him last night and I could just envision him like in 6 years with like a different look, like a shaved head or something, but like as a fully grown version of himself. And I could see him winning an MVP at some point. I like his size, his style, just the way that he can command a game, all of it. I love it so much.
I'll just
so
take
fun to
the
watch.
Fact he's fun. I'll take the fact he's fun and he gets it. And I love the fact that we finally are starting to have a collection of players who aren't trying to be like, well, if it's not what I think it should be, then I'm gone or I'm gonna get mad. Instead, it's like, how do we make this work? And that is such a difference here, because there's good players here. The question is, are they willing to make it work? Because, you know, Cat's not changing. Cat's not going to change. Cat is Cat. He's going to complain about being fouled. He's going to complain about being called. He's going to fall down. He's going to flop. He's also going to make some tremendous plays. And the question is, can you use the good of Cat to your advantage to win? And it finally feels like there is a possibility here that the answer to that question is yes, instead of, well, screw it. It's just not going to work.
Yeah. Their best lineup by far still remains, and they can't put this lineup out because these guys are hurt. But you want the
music?
Okay. I'm waving the flag.
There you go.
I'm waving the flag. The flag is back. Flag is back.
That's right. Clippers, you're next.
Yep.
Mavericks. Hey, Notch. Jazz, the music is about to stop.
Just another.
The sun will go down. I'm not going to rip the Warriors because they're probably going to win the title.
They're going to win.
Yeah.
Another notch on the flag.
The Wolves' best five-man lineup so far this year is Towns, D'Lo, Edwards, Pat Beverly, and Jared Vanderbilt. That is the lineup of death, as we coined it, along with our Wolves beat writer friends last week. And so those guys, Vanderbilt and Beverly, didn't play last night. But when those five guys are on the court together, per 100 possessions, it's a net plus 45 points per 100 possessions for the Timberwolves. That's ridiculous.
It's a net L for opponents. I don't need your stats. I don't need your stats. It's a net L.
That's right.
There we go. All right, yeah.
So
impressive, though. That
Timberwolves
was fun last
night. Just dominating right now. One game over 500. All right, boys. This is Mackie and Judd, Daily Minnesota Sports Entertainment. And every single Tuesday on the show, we go through our list of who gets it and who doesn't. Let's start with Judd Zulgad here. We'll get to random season recall. Who across the landscape of America, Minnesota, America, wherever you want to start, who gets it, who doesn't?
Boy, I've got a few of them, but I'm going to start with who gets it. So the news broke on Sunday that Tanner Morgan would be returning for a sixth year as the Gophers quarterback in 2022, which set Twitter aflame with Gopher football enthusiasts who really were not pleased about this development and said, can he come back as a coach? I mean, he's a great person. They pulled a me. He's a great guy, but then who gets it? Yesterday we find out, and I think this is a big move. Mike Sanford Jr., after two seasons as the Gophers co-offensive coordinator and probably most importantly, chief play caller, is out. He will not be returning. I don't know if they're going to turn over the play calling to the guy who is Sanford's co-coordinator, or if they are going to go outside. Kirk Soraka, right? The guy who...
What do you think it is?
Yeah. I just want to hear you try to pronounce it a few more times.
I think it's Kirk Soraka.
I think that's probably right. Give us a couple other variations.
I don't think it's a hard... Well, it could be a harder C, Sriracha? But I don't think it's C-I-C-I-A-R-R-O-C-C-O, so I don't think that there's a hard C there, so I think it's Soraka. But he went to Penn State in 2019, was immediately fired, and then was an offensive analyst of some sort, which I'm sure is not a great job, in college football last year. He and Fleck were together, I think, for 7 years before he left. I don't know if they parted on good terms, but he is obviously the guy who was the Gophers coordinator in 2019 when they had a very good year. And most importantly, Tanner Morgan did as well. Now, he did have Tyler Johnson and he did have Rashad Bateman, which helped quite a bit. But the point being is, if Tanner Morgan has any chance to rebound and come back and be a semblance of the guy that he was and not the guy that we saw in 2021, Mike Sanford Jr. and his reliance on the run. The Gophers, the only teams that ran more than the Gophers were the service academies. Okay? This is the only chance, good for the Gophers, for making a change at play caller.
I'm going to quickly piggyback off that by saying, who doesn't get it? PJ Fleck. For hiring Mike Sanford Jr. in the first place and keeping him around for two seasons.
Ah, okay.
So, Mike Sanford Jr., this is his resume before the Gophers brought him in for 2 years.
Yep.
He was the offensive coordinator at Notre Dame for the only, like, train wreck stretch of Brian Kelly's career there. They went 4-8 in 2016 with Mike Sanford Jr., and their offense was just in shambles.
Yep.
They went 4-8 in 2016 with Mike Sanford Jr. as the offensive coordinator. He leaves, they bounce right back, and they become contenders again. Okay, so then he goes and takes the head coaching job at Western Kentucky. I mean, if you have any chance to be like a head coach for your career, Western Kentucky seems like a really good spot to win a few games and, you know, have a great first stepping stone. So they went like 500 in the first year, and then the second year they train wrecked to 3-9. Mm-hmm. And then so he gets let go from there because it was a disaster. And then he becomes the offensive coordinator at Utah State. So he's now gone from offensive coordinator at Notre freaking Dame. And 3 years later, he's now like, okay, now he's at Utah State. So a couple steps down there.
Sure.
But he gets to coach Jordan Love, who's one of the top young quarterbacks in the country at that point, coming off a great season. And Jordan Love has the worst year of his college career. Literally everything this dude has touched offensively,
yeah,
and as a leader, train wrecked in the years leading up to his stint as Gopher offensive coordinator. And so the Tanner Morgan drop off, I think part of it's he's just not that great of a quarterback. He's not like super mobile. You know, he had two NFL receivers in 2019. It helps. But he's not as bad as he has been playing, I think, the last couple years. Get him a real coach,
yeah,
a real coordinator with a real system that isn't just handing off 70% of snaps.
And I also heard that the relationship between Sanford and Morgan was not the same as it had been as far as the amount of correspondence, in-game discussions, things like that.
Dude, you're fired. Yeah,
just go. Yeah.
And why are you here in the first place?
Well, and that's why I'd like to see the Gophers turn towards somebody that Fleck knows. Like, don't just go out and, oh, this guy looks good, right? Like, get somebody that Fleck knows. There's no reason the Gophers offense, and I'm not just talking about the quarterback position, there's no reason that offense looked as bad as it did at times. Like, that's ridiculous.
Real quick here, just a bonus one, just a shout out. Who gets it, who doesn't? Who gets it? PJ Fleck's agent.
Yeah.
Probably started sensing about a month ago, oh, interesting. Okay, USC over here. It sounds like LSU's going to be open. Okay, Florida.
You think he scared
man,
the Gophers?
That's crazy. Probably went to the Gophers and said,
like, okay, cool.
Listen, my guy is fully immersed and all in on coaching this season. I don't want to have to take a few phone calls from the SEC and from the Pac-12. Yeah. Why don't we put it to bed before it becomes a thing here? Let's tack a couple extra years out of that contract, give my guy a little boost in the salary. What do you say? What do you say, Mark?
If I was Mark Coyle and PJ Fleck's agent called me and said, the SEC, Judd, they might be lurking, I would hang up the phone. I'd be like, okay, cool.
Well, he could get one of the – I don't think he could get the Florida job or – I mean, LSU was obviously going for
and USC pretty much dismissed
hunting,
him immediately, and that's his former boss.
He needs like one – he needed – honestly, if they wouldn't have lost to Bowling Green – like, let's say they beat Bowling Green in Illinois.
Yep.
And yeah, they're sitting 10-2 for the second time in 3 years. It's very possible that him losing to Bowling Green and to Illinois cost him, if he wanted to, cost him a chance to go on and like take a step to a bigger school. But we get him 7 more years. See what happens.
Yeah. Row the boat.
I'm still rowing the boat.
Row the damn
boat.
I never stopped
rowing the boat.
Nope. I just started. I'm not stopping. I just started.
You love the Gophers so much that you peaced out before the game to go watch Mata Mia.
And haven't watched college football since like 1998. When
later.
Who gets it? Who doesn't?
I'll say who doesn't get it, and I'm gonna rehash a conversation from yesterday on statements, but my who doesn't get it is Kirk Cousins and finding the right butt. Now, as a man who loves
football. You can't let it go. You can.
Nope.
The defense gives up 30 points and
nope,
you just have
I can't.
To
he's not
Kirk
the reason they
the
lost, and he's not the reason they won, okay? But as a man who loves football and specific butts, I would never line up behind the wrong butt, but Kirk Cousins obviously did that on Sunday. This excerpt from Roger Sherman of TheRinger.com from his winners and losers piece in Week 12. As you can guess, Kirk Cousins fell under the losers tab. The things a quarterback says about a center's butt reveal the deeply personal nature of their relationship. And no current NFL quarterback shares more of these moments with their center than Kirk Cousins. In the modern NFL, most snaps are taken from the shotgun, but the Vikings prefer to do things the old-fashioned way, by having Cousins shove his hands under his center's butt and take the ball. In 2019, the Vikings took 70% of their snaps from under center, while league average was just 37%. In 2020, they took 64%, and now they're down to 56% this year, but that still leads the league. So the Vikings are still choosing to go under center more than any other team. I think Kirk does like that. And as Rodgers...
Does Mason Cole have the sweating problem that Garrett Bradbury has?
He doesn't. That's the issue.
He didn't have the sweaty butt.
Yeah. And as Rodgers says, Cousins has expressed a deep familiarity, with his center's butts. Because he went in that long rant about Garrett Bradbury having butt sweat. So the most famous quarterback, as Roger points out, who did not line up under the right center, was Willie Beeman, our guy that we reviewed on Any Given Sunday. If you guys remember, he lined up behind the center, or on the guard, and not behind the center. The ball goes behind him. The problem is Kirk Cousins is not Willie Beeman. Willie Beeman has athletic ability that can make up for plays like that. But Kirk Cousins lining up behind the wrong butt is shocking to me when you consider he is lining up behind a butt more than any other quarterback in the NFL.
I love the data. The data behind this, who gets it, who doesn't, is great. I haven't spent a whole lot of time, you know, with two hands under another man's derriere. But I just feel like Ole Udo has a much larger butt than most offensive linemen, right? Like, wouldn't you kind of know the surface area in general would be just alarmingly larger. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I have to go back and look at the film and see, but kind of surprised he didn't notice within a couple seconds.
The sad thing is, if Kirk had come back and thrown a dart to Jefferson for a touchdown, this would be like a great laugh-along thing. Mm-hmm. Hey, Kirk lined up and then he threw a touchdown. Unfortunately, it becomes a complete punchline because he didn't.
Well, the Cousins Crusaders would come back at you and say, You guys are making, first of all, he was the only one that knew what the play was. And so he's trying to fix everyone's problems just like he always does. You know, the defense is garbage. The wide receivers don't know where they're lining up. Mike Zimmer's a clown. Like, he's the only one holding this whole thing together. And you guys just rip him.
The sad thing is, though, we could all laugh. All of us, the Crusaders and the non-Kirk stands, could all laugh as one. If he hits Jefferson twice, if he hits him on the two-point conversion and on that fourth down play, the Vikings leave with a win, and Kirk lining up wrong becomes a great story in which we can say, remember that big Vikings win in San Francisco? Instead, it is now number two on Vikings moments in San Fran to Jim Marshall running the wrong way at Kezar Stadium. That's number one still. Now Kirk lining up under the guard to take a snap is number two, the greatest boners in Vikings history in San Francisco.
There's a word.
Merkel's boner, man. That's a great term. It means a mistake.
Why are you saying that word?
But we're talking about... I don't know. Why?
Google the word.
Yeah, no,
Google
I know.
No, I'm not on a word computer.
The specific topic that was just discussed, and you used that word.
Hey, it's fair game. That word's a very fair word to use.
In the words of Peter Griffin.
That word is a very fair word to use.
Okay, real quick, another group of people, a subgroup here underneath this. The people that have said, well, Tom Brady forgot how many downs there were in a game one time.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you guys rip Tom Brady? Well, Tom Brady has seven, is it, Super Bowl championships?
And actually, we did.
We did rip him. It was funny.
And we chided him for mm-hmm. that.
Right. But you get more leeway to make mistakes when you have a mantle full of Lombardi trophies.
Sure. Yeah.
If you've never been within 3 weeks of a Super Bowl, mm-hmm. you've never been to the conference championship game, and you make boneheaded mistakes, you butt fumble Mark Sanchez, or you line up in a key moment behind a right guard, all right? Like, you don't have the backing of seven Lombardi trophies to, I guess, cushion the, no pun intended.
See, there you go. The cushion. Yeah, I like it.
All right, back to Judd.
Okay, for the first time ever on this segment, I'm going to unveil who gets it and who doesn't simultaneously.
Nice.
Because it works out
these.
Perfectly. Who gets it? Major League Baseball. They have figured out the magical way to set off the free agent frenzy that the Mackey and Judd Show has been clamoring for really since the day that we began doing the show together. They get it. It's been great. The last two or three days have been glorious. We've got all these signings, and yes, some of them are irresponsible, but we don't care about that.
Love it.
It's a non-salary cap league. But who doesn't get it? Major League Baseball. They've triggered the free agent frenzy because we are on the eve of what could be a very extended lockout. So basically, they have found the way to cause chaos, which is a glorious thing when it comes to free agents, off-season signings. But that chaos is being caused by the fact that we are approaching Wednesday, the expiration of the CBA. So at the same time that they get it, they don't, because how baseball, how Rob Manfred-esque is it to have this triggered by the fact that we are now staring a work stoppage in the face, causing action that we've been clamoring for years?
So the question is, how do you create this action in a way that you can have it every year, right?
Like, you know what you do?
Well, a one-year CBA agreements would be helpful.
That would be great. But I think if we're not going to have a cap, because a cap clearly spurs this in most leagues, I think what you have to do is, and you got to fight this one, but you got to set parameters on dates for signings.
And or parameters on contract lengths, because right now there's no structure. Like you said, when there's a salary cap and a salary floor like there are in the other sports, it's like, okay, well, we know how much money we have to spend, so let's go. And it all happens within like 2 weeks. And then the NBA has this amazingly fun two-week period. The NFL, there's a frenzy, and then there's a second wave. In baseball, it takes 5 months for Bryce Harper to sign because there are no parameters. Bryce Harper's agent says, my client wants $400 million over 15 years. And the opposing teams are like, no. How about 8 years and $200 million? And then they just stare at each other for 4 months because there's no parameters. At least in the NHL, there's like, all right, you can only sign 7 year contracts or whatever the length is now, right? Like if baseball even had that, if you say, all right, there's no salary cap, but the max length of contract you can sign is 7 years or 6 years. I don't think it fixes the problem, but it provides a starting point for teams to actually negotiate. Okay, so we all agree it's a 7 year deal. Okay, is it $40 million a year or is it $30 million a year? And you come to a deal much more quickly.
But, I mean, this has been great. Like, this is what we want. It's this complete frenzy of sign, guys.
Except for the Twins.
I would put, well, you know, yeah, but they got a Buxton deal done. I mean, I will give them some credit there.
Bob Nightingale on the team. Tweeting out just like literally a minute ago, too. Oh, no, the MLB and union meeting is over after just 30 minutes. Not a good sign.
Oh, this is going to take forever. The one thing that we need to see, though, is when this is done, because I think it's going to take a long time. But when this is done, the one thing that hockey got so right is they've got to come back with all the new rules that are going to help this game. The pitch clock has to be, like, you've got to hash that all out now. Get it done now. Come back with a game that you've made the rule changes that are going to help the game. Pitch clock, if you're going to ban shifts, all of that stuff needs to be done within this work stoppage period.
Who doesn't get it? Speaking of baseball free agency, all of the Rob Refsnyder propagandists from last year. Rob Refsnyder has officially migrated from the Midwest. Refsnyder magic carpet ride is officially over for the Twins. Mm. The Red Sox have signed Rob Refsnyder to a minor league contract.
He's going to be a great Pawtucket. He's going to be great in Pawtucket. I love Pawtucket.
He'll manage Pawtucket in about 3 years. But do you remember, this happens all the time. Like, the Twins were the greatest power-hitting team in baseball history 2 years ago. And by the middle of 2021, they were relegated to pumping the tires of a 30-year-old career minor leaguer that had like a 150 major league batting average because he changed his swing. Look, guys, he changed the mechanics of his swing. It's crazy. And then he was like hot for 3 weeks because, I don't know, pitchers were throwing him fastballs or whatever. And he wound up, not to like crap on him, but like I'm more just – we get fixated on, but like, look at this guy. No, Lamont Wade, the young guy that you jettisoned for a middle reliever that you then jettisoned three weeks later, like because you had to hold on to Jake Cave and Rob Refsnyder.
I know.
Jake Cave, who's still on the team. So the Rob Refsnyder propagandists, you know who you are, that pump the tires on a career minor leaguer trying to get fans excited. You knew that he was going to let fans down, and you still... You still push the propaganda.
But he did change his swing.
And he did fill it admirably for Byron Buxton, Phil. I don't know why you're so negative about
After
this.
After never playing center field. You know what a great story
that is.
Look at Rob Refsnyder.
Rob Refsnyder. Roaming center field in Minneapolis.
Roaming the outfield. Now he's in left center. Now he's in right center.
He's over his last 32.
But he's got a smile on his face. Form, yeah.
Coming up next, Al, holding the bat upside down seems to be working for Robbie Refsnyder.
Why?
And later, we go to the training table with Miguel Sano, where he picks all the fatty foods, but he's hitting for power.
Why, the Monte Carlo wings are Miguel Sano's favorite pregame meal.
Ooh, hold on a second.
I had some over the weekend. They were really good.
Those are pretty good.
Can't miss them.
Those are pretty
can't say we're all. Can't beat them.
They're pretty legit. I'm not going to rip those.
No, not at all. I'll say who gets it. I'll stick on the NFL theme, though. I'll say George Kittle. San Francisco 49ers tight end George Kittle. After Sunday's game against the Vikings, a ton of penalties, mostly holding calls. Kittle took offense to Mike Zimmer's comments about the officiating in that game. Zimmer said, quote, "These guys hold all the time, so they're grabbing us around the waist, grabbing our backs. The officials, they don't want to call it every play, but until they start calling it every play, they're not going to stop doing it." So here's what George Kittle had to say after hearing that comment from Mike Zimmer.
I get away with a lot of holding. I mean, I think if you're running your feet and your hands in inside, just because a guy spins and flails his arm, it's not holding. He's just flopping. I mean, you can watch plenty of pass plays. I finally got a holding call out there in a pass route. I got hugged and tackled, and I think there were like three of those out there that don't get called. It's football. You know, refs throw flags, refs don't throw flags. It's just the game. And if you're going to sit on the sideline and complain about holding the whole time, I tell you guys to make better plays.
Oh, God, I love
actually,
that.
I think I agree with George Kittle.
Yeah, I agree with him.
The Vikings aren't 5-6 because they're getting screwed by the officials.
Well, exactly.
And the Packers, according to their fans, got screwed here. So, like yeah, that goes the back and forth.
The Packers, who have, like, the second fewest penalties called in the NFL, like, oh, sorry, the refs weren't calling 10 penalties on the Vikings.
Yeah. That's life, man.
No, I think George Kittle gets it. I can't stand. And look, yesterday against the Timberwolves game, officials were suspect. I get that. Pacers got teed up a couple times, too, but... It's just the ongoing battle with Minnesota versus officials is hysterical to me. It looks like they're trying to honestly prove the point the refs hate them more than they even want a championship. It's very frustrating to watch.
Do I think Karl Anthony Towns doesn't get enough calls? Yes, he doesn't get enough calls. Do I think he should be flailing on the ground and complaining after every single one of them? No, I don't.
And he would get more calls if he didn't do that.
Do we think the refs are out to get Ole Udo, or do we think he's just out over his skis a little bit as a first-year starting offensive lineman? You know? Where does the truth lie?
Do you think the Cat is also going to learn at some point, Phil, to clean up the act of the one thing that drives me crazy? He flails so much. Like he starts to drive, and then he gets going, and Jim Pete has addressed this too. Like, he starts flailing, and his arms and legs are, like, and he's all contorted. And it feels like there's a lack of smoothness that makes it tough to call a foul against him because he himself is initiating so much contact.
He needs to read a book on stoicism or something. Like, just be like Kobe Bryant, still, efficient with your movements.
Still, yeah, but that's exactly it. He's not still. Like, it's all, like, arms and legs, and then he flails down, and it's like, I don't even know if that's a foul or not. It looked like it might be, but
inflatable used car.
Yeah.
Tube guy.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like.
On the lane, oh, God.
And what's so weird is his shot from like, on three-point attempts is so smooth. Like, he does some things that are, for a big man, incredibly smooth. But his drives to the basket, it's just like, that's a perfect example, the inflatable, get everything now at my used car lot. Okay, who doesn't get it? Anybody who thinks that college sports are either A, pure, or B, that the athletes, athletes shouldn't be going into the transfer portal or whatever. Look, it's always been crazy and corrupt, but this is nuts now. Like you've got last night, Brian Kelly going from Phil's Irish to LSU, Lincoln Riley suddenly just jumps from Oklahoma to Southern Cal. This is craziness. And personally, I don't care, but like, I don't want to hear about Division I sports. This is about the kids. You can't kill these programs. This is a state run university and things are pure here. Like, this is the most corrupt. This makes pro sports look like a bunch of saints, because at least pro sports are somewhat sanctioned. College sports are out of control now.
LSU 2 years ago, right at the beginning of the pandemic, every athletic department employee making $80,000 a year or more had to take a pay cut, and then they just like flat let a bunch of them go.
Yeah.
And then they turn around and I think they had to buy out part of Ed Orgeron's contract, and then they give $95 million over 10 years to Brian Kelly. And I get it. If Brian Kelly is great for LSU and they win a couple national titles, all the revenue that it brings in, like, I totally get it. But it just, it's such a weird look.
Well, it's a weird look because of the amount of deception, though. The attempted deception. If they would come out and say, we're pretty corrupt and we don't care about kids. Like, let's be clear here. This is a money making venture and we will cut anyone off at the knees that we have to. I'd say bravo. I'll still watch, but that's exactly right.
Yeah.
But instead they're like, oh, today we have to kill the track and field program and this pains us. No, it doesn't. You don't care. And just come out and say, we're killing sports. Like we're going to kill tennis. We hate tennis here at our school.
We'll leave the courts up. Like, you guys can go.
Oh, intramurals are on, baby. Intramurals. You kids want to pay to come here and play? You play. But we ain't going to sanction it. So It's just, but this is actually, I think, jumped a shark that goes beyond pro sports, because it's more, there's more corruption and like the transfer portal and guys transferring midseason now. Let's just call a spade a spade.
All right, I'm going to piggyback again off Joe here. Right? So who gets it? Lincoln Riley for his efficiency in negotiating.
I love it.
All right, so Lincoln Riley and his Oklahoma squad lose a heartbreaker against Oklahoma State late Saturday night. I mean, this game got over at like 11 o'clock Central Time on Saturday night.
He's like looking at his watch. Coach, why are you looking at your watch?
And there's no way. I'm trying to think of what time he would get home. Like, they flew back. Like, he probably doesn't get home until, like, not that he can't be on his phone, not that he can't get a text from someone at USC, but, like, probably gets home around 1 or 2 in the morning, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
Or maybe maybe they stay in a hotel. I don't know how it works. But between, let's say, midnight on Saturday and, like, 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning when the news started to break, Lincoln Riley having a, and I'm using air quotes, first conversation with USC.
Who's this?
For the first time ever, never spoken to these people in my life or my agent, negotiates a $110 million contract with USC buying both of his homes in Norman for $500,000 over asking price and buying a $6 million home in Los Angeles for him and his family. And unlimited use of a private jet 24 hours, 7 days a week. And a bunch of other perks and bells and whistles. And assistant coaches coming over with him from Oklahoma to USC. What an amazing stealth negotiator at 3 o'clock in the morning Lincoln Riley is to get all of that done by the time the sun comes up and to be in contact with your family. And assistant coaches' families.
Wow. He got a call. He's like, I wonder who this number from Los Angeles. I don't know who this could be.
It says, hello, it's Lincoln. Oh, hi.
Why did Lincoln need two houses in Norman? That's my question.
I mean,
what's
why
the
not?
Second,
why,
it's what's the second house for?
What else are you going to spend your $8 million a year on? Couple
what's
cars?
The second house for?
Well, he probably had like a, like, I don't know. I've never been to Norman, but. There's probably some sort of like cabin situation, like a weekend home on some body of water.
So you're like a Brainerd, like a Brainerd Lakes home or something like that.
There's gotta be lakes in Oklahoma, right? Let's see. Norman, Oklahoma. This
one just was like, we'll buy that one. And now let's buy that one.
Oh yeah. There's a lake.
So he's got it's a cabin really. Or
yeah. There's
a
Lake Thunderbird State Park. So,
okay.
You know,
okay.
And my guess is he probably has like a real home and then like a home on a lake and then like a condo of some kind near campus or something.
And property taxes, rank 49th among states in Oklahoma. So
he's going to get hit by some nasty taxes in California.
Good luck with that, Link. Good luck
with that,
buddy.
I'm sure he'll be fine.
I think he'll be fine.
I'm sure he'll be fine when he tells the school to pay his taxes.
Yeah. Shout out to our friends at Federated Mutual Insurance Company, too, for powering Who Gets It, Who Doesn't. Who gets it? Federated gets it. And they get it on behalf of business owners. They're all about providing risk management tools and resources for your business. And when it comes to this time of year, you know, December is knocking on the door, cold weather. Protect yourself and your business from the elements. Just think about all the things that cold weather and or snowy conditions could do to affect your business. Find out more about the resources Federated can provide at federatedinsurance.com. And remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours. All right. Random season recall, where Declan goes into the archives of Minnesota sports seasons from the past and quizzes us.
Got an old Macadac special for this one.
Nice.
The 2012 Minnesota Twins. That's what we're going to go with. Random
season.
Right.
I was a beat writer covering this team.
I think you're going to clean
up
here.
This is also 9 years ago. So
I think you're going to clean
up. Little
cleanup
hitter. Little cleanup. Little Josh Willingham coming off a Silver Slugger award here. You can hit some bombs. I like your odds here. Let's start with the win total. How many wins for these 2012 Twins, Phil? And Judd?
Dude, these seasons, I gotta say, these seasons ran together aggressively.
Okay.
So 2011 was the 99 loss season.
Yes.
They were better in 2012, but not that much better. I think they lost like 96 games that year. Somewhere, I think it was
95, 96 games, yeah.
They were not very competitive.
Yeah. Yes. This began a long stretch of usually not being competitive. I'd say 95, 96 defeats is correct.
Let's go. We're looking for the losses?
Looking for the wins. I'm looking for the win total.
Okay, so math. So 66. Let's go 66.
66. 66. Final answer.
Yeah!
66 wins. On the nose.
Is it on the nose?
On the nose, oh, yeah. Baby.
Oh, hot start.
Here
you open the game with a home run.
Let's get
it. Oh, boy.
LFG.
Nice.
LFG.
Nice, Phil Mackey.
Five players hit double-digit home runs for that Twins team. Who are they?
Well, Willingham had to be one of them, right, Phil?
Yeah, Willingham was... Luke? This was Luke? The first year of Willingham getting banged up. Let's go Willingham for sure. Yeah, Judd, I'm pretty sure this was the year Plouffe hit like 20 home runs in 1 month.
Yeah, so June Plouffe. Into July, he was unbelievably hot, I think.
Plouffe?
Yep, Plouffe.
Plouffe.
Looking for five. All right, this is just a conversation among friends here.
Got it.
This was a... Joe Mauer was good in 2012. I can't remember if he hit double-digit home runs. Justin Morneau was still on the Twins.
Yes.
But I think this was like a weird down year for him. So I don't think he hit double-digit home runs.
Okay.
Ryan Domet, didn't he sign for that? Yeah, Ryan Domet was on the team in 2000. Let's go Ryan Domet.
Ryan
he
Domet.
Like 18.
Also on the nose, 18 home runs.
Oh, God.
Oh, dude, come on.
Oh, come on. Bring it.
Dude, this is Steph Curry from 40 feet here.
Bring it.
Two more.
Was Arcia on this team?
Was it this year or was it 13? I'm trying to remember. Because some of these years run together. I'm trying to remember who was I interacting with in the clubhouse. And I don't think Arcia was on that.
Okay. That's very possible.
I mean, he was on the team, but... So Dozier would have been up. Dozier might have hit 10.
When did Dozier have the call-up and then it went sour and they didn't bring him back for September?
That was 12. I'm pretty sure that was 12. But he might have still hit 10. All right, let's just... All right, so 2012, that was the Jamie... That was Willingham, Domet, Jamie Carroll.
Jamie Carroll, corner locker, baby.
Plouffe was in the mix in there. Michael Kadir, no, he was gone because Willingham replaced Kadir.
Okay. Oh, who was the big kid that we always thought was going to be the next Ortiz, and then he turned out not to be the next Ortiz?
Kenny Vargas.
Yeah.
It feels a little early for Kenny Vargas.
Okay.
I might be wrong though. So Declan threw me off because he said the Silver Slugger, but like that this was the year that Josh Willingham hit like 35 home runs.
You are correct.
This was the big Josh Willingham year.
Yep.
So this is all pieces. This was also the year that Joe Mauer took Aroldis Chapman like 104 miles an hour off the wall in a game at Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
This might have been a Joe Mauer 10 home run year. I'm going to go Joe Mauer.
Joe Mauer. 10. Exactly.
Bang.
10.
Bang.
Exactly 10. Got one more left.
Just got it. You hit a Mauer home run there, Phil.
Let's do
just cleared the fence.
Classic Mauer.
Okay, so you had Mauer catching. You had Domet kind of playing a swing role. Willingham in left. The center fielder would have been... Spam was gone. They traded Hicks for Vance... Or Revere for Vance Worley. So center field was just a hodgepodge. This was the year of Darren Mastroianni. We'll get to that. I'm sure we'll get to some of those. You're a good guy. Willingham, Plouffe, Domet, Mauer.
Mm-hmm.
The starting shortstop was Pedro Florimón to start the season because Plouffe played some third base.
Yeah, because he had the throwing disease.
I guess it would have. Let's go Brian Dozier.
Dozier. Just 6 home runs for Dozier that year. That's the year he got called up and then not called back up after being sent down in August.
Luke Hughes was on this team.
I might.
Excuse me.
The hammer, Luke Hughes.
Yeah, who was the DH? Morneau. I guess Morneau could have hit 10. I'm struggling here. All right, Justin Morneau.
Justin Morneau. Yes. Yes. Right. Those are the five.
What did he have?
He had 19.
That was good.
He had 19.
19?
Yeah.
Okay.
Power was coming down, but still.
Some pop.
He's got some pop. A little bit of pop
okay.
there.
All right. That's pretty impressive.
That was.
No, it's very impressive. Definitely impressive.
Okay.
Sure.
This is a great one here. Scott Diamond was the only pitcher to make at least 20 starts or more that season. But eight others had at least 10. I just want five of those eight.
Okay, so Scott Diamond's off the board.
Correct. He's already off the board.
What do you want?
There are
five of the eight to make at least 10 starts.
Okay.
Eight guys made 10 starts.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I want five.
Okay. So Vance Worley.
Mm-hmm. Vance Is that a Worley. Final guess?
Yeah. Oh my God. Wow. Okay. Wow. All right, Judd, just between us here. So this was the offseason. I'm pretty sure they went out and got Mike Pelfrey and Jason Marquis. I think their starting rotation was like.
And Kevin. Was this Kevin Correa, too?
Or was that the next year? No, because Correa made more than 20 starts in his first year.
I trust you.
But I'm trying to think. Jason Marquis might have gotten released. He got released in, like,
he did.
May, didn't he?
And then went
he
to the Padres. It feels like he didn't make 10 starts.
Okay,
he struggled and got released.
P.J. Walters.
P.J. Walters, final guess?
Yes.
Damn right P.J. Walters made starts.
Sam Deduno. Final guess.
Sam Deduno, too?
So it's a momentum going here. Okay.
Okay, who was the kid from Eden Prairie? Cole DeVries. Was Cole DeVries on this team?
He probably was. That's a good one, dude.
I don't know if he made 10 starts, but...
Let's go. Well, so we have one incorrect guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have one.
I'm gonna give you some names here.
Okay. All right.
Kevin Slowey, I think, was still hanging around here.
Okay.
Cole DeVries. I know they signed some pitchers here, but this is before the Phil Hughes Nolasco.
Right, right. Yes, I think Nolasco was 13.
I think they signed Mike Pelfrey this year.
Okay.
Mike Pelfrey.
Mike Pelfrey's fine.
You're early.
Really?
You're a year early.
Good God.
12 and 13 blend together? Weird. 13, 14, 11.
The absolute yuck of this pitching staff is impressive.
Okay, Cole DeVries. Let's go Judd's Cole DeVries.
DeVries. That's three. Give me two more.
Oh. Let's go Slowey. Kevin Slowey. Oh my God!
No, Kevin.
Okay,
Slowey.
Can I just throw a few more out here just for fun?
Yep.
Scott Baker.
I think Scott Baker.
All
was
right.
By then, right.
All right. I'm gonna dig deep. As Merling Vasquez.
He made six.
What about
he made six?
Brian Dunsing.
There you go.
Oh,
11 starts, 55 games. But yeah, 11 starts.
Okay. Pedro Hernandez.
This is great.
I feel like that's just a buzz on the entire 2012 Twins, which is very fitting.
Did Jason Marquis make 10 starts?
No, he made 7 before getting released.
Released.
What?
Okay, hold on. 8-4-7.
Okay.
Yeah, it took like 3 hours to pitch.
Okay, so we've given you Deduno,
mm-hmm.
DeVries, and
mm-hmm.
Dunsing.
Mm-hmm. And Walters.
And Walters gave PJ Walters, and we need.
You're missing two more. You've missed. You don't have the second or the third most starts on this team.
I freaking covered this beat.
So.
Pavano, Carl Pavano.
Pavano made 11, but not second or third on this team.
Wow.
You're overthinking.
Liriano? No, that wasn't this year. Liriano?
17 starts, 22 games, and then one more. I can't believe they tried this guy. He made 19 starts.
Was this the year that Francisco got traded to the White Sox?
Must have been.
He did, I think.
At the deadline?
Yeah, at the deadline. And then this guy made 19 starts and had an ERA of 7.3.
Liam Hendricks.
No, but Liam Hendricks. Actually, dang you. Liam Hendricks did make 16 starts that year, but that is not who I'm referencing.
I just. Boy.
This is a bloodbath.
I want this. I'm sorry. I know I'm dragging the show on here, but I want this. Who would have made more starts? Who would have made these starts? Deduno. Oh, my God. A 7 ERA. This is going to crush me.
19 starts. 98 innings.
So bad. God, their pitching was so bad.
Strikeout per 9 of 3.8.
What? Guardian. Oh, Nick Black.
There you go. Oh, man. What's that the magic number right there? That was the oh yeah, Nick Blackburn. Never got any
He's
damn strikeouts.
Such a good guy too. Such a good guy.
Great guy.
One of the nicest guys
ever. Great
human
being.
Oh my god.
Morgan, two of the nicest guys I've ever met.
Oh, that was terrible.
Oh my god. I have other questions, but well, I think that's it. I think the bloodbath there ends.
All right, we're good. Okay.
Just the starting pitching of the 2012 Twins. Just had us bleed out on Mackie and Judd and random season recall.
Just for fun, can I give you some center fielders here? Do you have a list of like?
Yeah.
This was the Eric Komatsu year too, wasn't it?
Yes, Komatsu was here.
Darren Mastriani.
Yep, Mastriani was there.
They might have called Aaron Hicks up. Maybe that was the next year.
Yes, Aaron Hicks. Let's see here. I'm on pitchers.
Also, what's his name? The guy who didn't blink. Cleet Thomas.
Cleet Thomas. Thomas. Yep. Cleet Thomas was here.
Okay.
Komatsu was here. How about this one? I don't know if he played center because it just designates his outfielder. But Matt Carson?
Yeah, Matt Carson.
Matt Carson.
That guy.
Actually, D-Span was here. Didard Span was there still.
Joe Benson, I think, played a little bit.
Matt Carson?
Yeah, I don't remember Matt Carson at all.
If I remember right, I feel like Matt Carson may have not worn batting gloves.
Okay.
I don't remember Matt Carson at all. Cleet Thomas, I remember well.
The Twins, this Twins team did lead the American League in stolen bases that year.
Good for them.
Yeah, well, Mastriani stole a bunch.
Ben Revere
was on this team.
He stole 40.
They eventually traded him for, was this the year that was Span still on this team?
Yeah.
I think Span might have
stolen this
team.
So yes. That winter they traded Span for
and
Alex
Revere.
Meyer and
Revere
they
for Vance Worley.
Vance and somebody else, right?
Yeah. Ben Revere had
Trevor May.
150 hits and 133 of them were singles.
Yeah.
And they put him in right field
possibly the weakest arm right fielder in the history of baseball.
Yeah. Amazing.
Wow.
You wouldn't want to upset Spanzy with his vertigo.
No.
Anyhow, that was random season recall there. That was
bloodbath.
A year that I would like to forget professionally for many different reasons. There it is. All right. Good stuff here. Mackie and Judd, Daily Minnesota Sports Entertainment. Write that down, predictions on tomorrow's show. See you guys.
This holiday season, Peloton's got a gift for you. Get up to $200 off accessories with the purchase of a Peloton bike, Bike Plus, or Tread. And take your workout to the next level with accessories like non-slip grip dumbbells, a heart rate monitor, cycling shoes, and more. Peloton, motivation that moves you. This limited time offer ends December 25th. Visit onepeloton.com to learn more. All access membership separate. Offer ends December 25th. Cannot be combined with other offers. See additional terms at onepeloton.com.